Mr. Steele, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please the court, John Steele, Assistant Counsel for Discipline, appearing on behalf of the relator. This morning we have a reciprocal discipline case against Attorney Erin Leary. She received an admonishment in Arizona where she practices. There's really no big issue in this case other than what the appropriate sanction should be. In a reciprocal discipline case, the attorney, the respondent, can attack the prior state's findings based on a lack of due process, which she did not allege, and or an infirmity of proof. Well, she admitted the facts in Arizona, so there's no question there. And the burden is on the respondent to show that the sanction here should be less than what happened in Arizona. The problem in this case is they have another level of a sanction in their state called the admonishment. And if, as near as I can tell, it falls somewhere between our private reprimand, which the Committee on Inquiry would issue, and a public reprimand, which this court can issue. Ms. Leary contends that the admonishment is private. She was led to believe it was private. I can find nothing in the Arizona rules that indicates that. Plus, when it first came in, not being familiar with their hierarchy and whether it was public or private, we went into the Arizona court's website, and it's readily available from their website to the public. It's no secret disciplinary council site. It's the public site. And so it's not a private admonishment in Arizona. We would ask that she be issued a public reprimand. I guess I have nothing further in this case.
Well, the papers seem to suggest that it's private, and that was motivating the lawyer, right, to enter into that agreement.
Right, and she may have been led to believe that it was private, but clearly it isn't. It's on their public website, and I guess it's sort of...
I'm sorry, what's on the public website?
The admonishment.
The admonishment itself.
Right.
But I guess it's a different question is, in terms of the styles, availability of discipline, what are the words they use in Arizona, and what do they equate to, if anything, in terms of discipline in this jurisdiction?
Well, they have a private reprimand in Arizona, and they have an admonishment. And it's like I said, it's somewhere between our private reprimand and a public reprimand. Because
which one of those two? I'm sorry, you said there's a private reprimand and an admonishment.
Right.
Which did she receive?
She received an admonishment.
Okay. So what does that equate to, if anything, in our system?
It doesn't. It's, like I said, it's somewhere between the private reprimand that our committee can issue, which remains private.
Right.
And a public reprimand, which this court can issue.
Is there a public reprimand in Arizona?
Yes.
So
which is
private,
above an admonishment.
And a public.
Right.
Do we have the authority to do a private reprimand?
I suppose you do, but since it's a public case, I don't know how private it would be. In discussing it with Mr. McGowan, I suppose this court could remand it back to the Committee on Inquiry and start the process all over, which would sort of defeat the purpose of Rule 21 for reciprocal discipline, where we don't have to prove the case again.
What purpose does any sanction at all in Nebraska serve? If we simply had an opinion that says, yes, she was admonished in Arizona, we don't, for the purposes of this question, we don't have a private reprimand that we can do. The admonishment was less serious than our public reprimand. Can't this court choose to impose no additional sanction whatsoever? And if that's the case, why shouldn't we just do that?
Well, I suppose you could, But I suppose that defeats the purpose of the rule that if they are sanctioned in another state, we are required to bring it to this court to consider the appropriate sanction that this court should impose.
Does the rule anticipate essentially any ruling by this court? Could be more, could be less.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And that's what all the cases have held.
Okay. Thank you.
And I suppose you could find, yes, Arizona did that, but we're not going to do anything. Suppose you can do that, which would basically be a dismissal. This is sort of a tough one to decide as far as what
she's not practicing in Nebraska.
No.
Has
no,
never
she's
practiced.
Active.
Never practiced in Nebraska, has she?
Well, I believe she did for a while.
For some period of time.
Yes, yes.
But she has the ability to practice
sure.
in Nebraska.
Sure. And as noted in the Arizona order in our briefs, she's never had any discipline before on our radar or Arizona's. So it's not like she's one of our problem child.
And there were some mitigating factors in this situation as well, is that correct?
Oh, very much so. I mean, that's the whole basis of it. She had a destitute client that she provided shelter and clothing for, and she was trying to do the humanitarian thing. And most states still say, we can't do that as attorneys. Louisiana has opened up a little bit, and they have some rules that you can do that, provide living expenses. But as of now, that's the only state that I'm aware of.
Do you take any issue with the facts that are alleged in the opposition to the motion for reciprocal discipline that she filed? She has a narrative in there with respect to potential mitigating factors.
Oh, right. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
No. In fact, I'm sure there's others that she could have brought up. I think her acts were totally humanitarian in nature. She wasn't trying to take advantage of this destitute client. She was just trying to help him out. And as Mr. McGowan earlier said to me, this is a good case of no good deed goes unpunished. You have anything else? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. McGowan, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Tom McGowan from McGrath North in Omaha. I'm very proud to represent Aaron here today. I've known Aaron for over 30 years. I've, to answer your question, Your Honor, she practiced with her father, Penn Leary, in Omaha. When he passed, she opened her solo shop, and her husband, Gary, was a member of our firm, a partner for about 25 years before the two of them moved to Arizona, took and passed the Arizona Bar, and opened a two-person shop specializing in estates.
How long ago was that?
About 10 years, 12 years, I would guess. During the whole time that I've worked with Aaron, and we've worked on some cases after they've been down and when it was here, Aaron has always gravitated to these types of clients. The ones that were less fortunate, the ones that probably didn't have access to the courts, but for the kindness of her heart. And so when she called me about what was going on, I wasn't surprised by the client that she was representing. And I guess I was stunned by what was going on in these disciplinary proceedings. And I thank Mr. Steele. I don't know of a kind of prosecution that I could see in reading his briefs and everything else, and I mean that.
You've taken the position that this court could do a private reprimand.
I take the position this court can and should dismiss this matter.
All right.
This court looks at this, as Mr. Steele points out, you're able to take an independent look at the facts, what occurred down there, and to make an independent decision.
So you anticipated my follow-up question, which was assuming that we can't do a private reprimand, what should we do? And the answer is simply dismiss.
Your Honor, you're exactly right. Whether it's a private reprimand or a letter of admonishment, how much more public could we make this reprimand in Nebraska than being here today? Aaron has traveled up from Phoenix to be here today. We're in front of the Supreme Court arguing about a private reprimand in the state of Arizona. Why are we seeking a harsher penalty than what the venue where these egregious acts occurred? I don't understand that. I think she suffered enough.
Do you take any issue with Mr. Steele's representation that the admonishment exists open to the public on the Arizona website?
I couldn't find it, but I'm not very good with electronic, Sean. And so you can take that with a grain of salt. But I do want to get into a few issues. Aaron's client, Mr. Morris, a street smart young guy, sole heir to about $80,000 of his dad's estate. There were no other heirs. And he called Aaron after going through down there. They have inheritance funding, which would be similar to selling your paycheck early here. And of that $80,000, he'd cashed in about $31,000. He gets 65 cents on the dollar. So he got about $20,000 out of the estate in advance. He went through those between June and September of 2015. He was evicted from his apartment. He had contacted Aaron earlier about trying to get some emergency funds. She was unsuccessful. Aaron drives down and picks him up from the apartment and the meager belongings that he has left and takes him to a hotel. Checks him into the hotel. He has no money. Aaron uses her credit card. Then she takes him to a grocery store and gets him some food, about $28 worth of food. Takes him back to the hotel. Then Aaron goes back, and on September 7th of 2015, the same day this has just occurred, Aaron calls the Arizona State Bar Ethics Hotline to discuss the ethical issues in representing this young man in the eviction proceeding and trying to get money from him and the fact that she's just used her credit card so that he has shelter and food. And she's told about the same thing I'm told when I call the IRS hotline. That's just read the rules. She got no guidance in trying to explain this to the bar that would later sanction her. So we go to the rules that she was supposed to read, and I know she did, and it says a lawyer shall not provide financial assistance to a client in connection with pending or contemplated litigation. I think we can stop there. There was no litigation, no contemplated. I can't fathom how litigation could have been involved in this. He's a sole heir. The money is there. They're just waiting for distributions. I think you can stop there and say, you know, without litigation, that rule doesn't apply. But that rule isn't black and white. It goes on. There's two exceptions. One says a lawyer may advance court costs, and we all know that, in a situation where there's a contingent fee. But there's a second exception that says a lawyer representing an indigent client may pay court costs and expenses of litigation. And we read the annotations, and what does it say is to allow access to court. Well, what's the access to the court? Is that when Aaron bought him shoes? Because he had none. When she bought him clothes, you know, when she gave him food so that he had the strength to go into court, I'm not sure what that means, and I cannot find anything close that would give us an analogy. But what I did find was an old advisory opinion from Nebraska from November 30th of 2000. And the opinion was requested because a young man was wondering if it was ethical to refer his client to an agency that would fund work for personal needs. And the court rules that it does, and they get into that monetary advances aren't looked upon with great favor, but there are instances when it's not improper. And it gets into the discussion that it's debated that at times there exists some tension between this absolute ban on lawyers advancing funds for a client's living expense and Canon 2, which encourages lawyers to find ways for those of moderate means to have access to the courts. It goes on to say exactly what we're talking about here, that if a client's unable to provide for his family the basic necessities, it may have an impact on what occurs in the court. But we're not through with Aaron, because after she calls the ethics hotline, about 2 weeks later, he's picked up for vagrancy. Aaron drives to jail, gets him out of jail, stops, takes him into a store, buys him a sleeping bag, buys him some more food, takes him down to his brother's house in Mesa. That doesn't work out well, and 2 weeks later, we have the same circle. Aaron gets a call. He's in jail. She bails him out. This time, she takes him to her condominium. Her and Gary bought a condominium when they first went down there before they had a house. She puts him in the condominium. And I stopped there because I'm not sure what message we're trying to send to maybe the members of the bar or to me as a 40-year member. But I'll tell you what, I've never run a survey, but I would be stunned at how many members of our bar would allow a homeless person in their car, let alone put them in their condominium. And even further, to walk down the grocery store aisles with them and help them put food. their basket, help them find some clothes that are warm, a sleeping bag to stay in. To me, that's incredible. I totally admire what she did. Maybe I can't say that. I don't know, since we're here on an ethical complaint. But that I strongly feel that what she did was totally humanitarian, was done out of kindness and out of compassion. There's not one sinister thing here. She didn't take an extra dime. And when she goes into court, she asks for the fees and costs. She provides a 15-page itemized statement, and everything is set forth there. And that may have been her undoing, because when they go to a hearing on those fees, it's uncontested. The judge writes, reviewing the petition and the itemized statement, the court will grant the petition. So she gets her $6,000 in fees. However, counsel Aaron Leary should contact the bar and get an opinion, even if it's informal, as to whether or not it's proper for her as counsel to loan money to her client. There's no complaint by the client. There's no complaint by the opposing counsel. This was a judge asking for the opinion. And at this point in time, unfortunately, Aaron's husband, her law partner, father of her two children, dies after about a seven-month battle with throat cancer. So when Aaron's told to submit this to the court, her thoughts are with her children and trying to put the finishing touches on her daughter's wedding, which now is going to occur without dad. She's trying to keep the law practice, which has gone from two to a one-person one. So she's got a lot of things going on, and quite frankly, she did a poor job of representing herself when she replied to the bar and set forth the facts that should have been heard by them. But they agree to a private admonishment. She says, I want to get this beyond me. I want to move on. And then here we are today. So, as I say, this bothers me as a member of this bar.
Early,
because there's, I'm sorry.
Early in your argument, you referred to the rule about litigation and suggested there was none. But isn't an estate proceeding litigation?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
You have any authority
for that? If you would say
that
to half the members of our law firm, they think they're litigators. Everybody else does other things.
Do you have any authority for the proposition that an estate proceeding is not litigation?
I do not. You know, I looked at Black's Law Dictionary.
Assume that we disagree with that contention. Does that have any impact on the
Absolutely
rest
not.
Of this? All right.
Absolutely not, because then you get to the exceptions, and it talks about what you can do for an indigent client. It's not just providing money. You can give it to them. You can pay the court costs in that situation to allow access to the courts. I see my time's running out. I think she's been sanctioned enough. I think she's been embarrassed. I think she's been humiliated. And if you went through the seven factors that Mr. Steele listed, there's not one that would require that she be further sanctioned in this proceeding. So I just ask you one thing, because as I was preparing for this...
Let me ask you one thing. I think our difficulty with this is already a disciplinary matter that has taken place in Arizona. Your arguments probably would have been great down there, and we traditionally have honored the reciprocal nature that other bar associations or other states have, the discipline that has come from other states. This would be unprecedented for us not to do something in this jurisdiction. What is your response to that?
If the court cannot find it in its collective hearts to dismiss this, then as Mr. Steele suggests, referring it back to the Committee on Inquiry. But what if you're the state of Arizona, are you going to be offended by this court dismissing this? I mean, they had a private reprimand, and as I say, it's here today. I don't know how much more public it could possibly be, but the state of Arizona certainly ought to recommend that on a reciprocal action, the court here has a chance to look at independently of the facts. Maybe they didn't get all the facts. Maybe there's some new facts here, but you have the ability to look at those facts now and make an independent judgment, and to make an independent judgment on what the discipline, if any, should be for her. So you're not stepping on their toes. You're doing what our law allows you to do. Aaron and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
2 minutes and 40 seconds.
2 minutes and 40 seconds, Mr. Steele.
just real briefly, as you recognized, all the prior cases on reciprocal discipline, we accept the findings of the sister state. She did not challenge the findings of Arizona. As I pointed out in the beginning, she can challenge the prior case on due process grounds or on an infirmity of proof. She didn't raise that in her response. So I think she has to live with the facts as found by the Arizona court.
Well, ultimately, the problem here is we don't have an exactly reciprocal form of discipline. Isn't that the ultimate problem?
That's the problem.
And so what's your best suggestion about how we deal with that? Either we increase to public reprimand or we decrease to do nothing. Which is the better choice?
I think the public reprimand would be our closest because, I mean, you refer it back to the Committee on Inquiry, then we're relitigating it.
Right.
Well, the rules already, or prior cases already say, we don't relitigate it. Public reprimand, I know this has caused her embarrassment. I talked to her on the phone when it first came to us. Problem is, it is public. In Arizona and here, by our filing with this court. So any further embarrassment, I don't see where it would come in. It's public. It's a reprimand. That should be the end of it.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is